Being disabled or having a chronic illness can feel like you're moving forward in reverse. I'm your host, Scott Martin. Join me and my new friends from this underrepresented community as we talk about disrupting the status quo and creating change within the world and within ourselves. Hey, life's a road trip. Hop in. Let's turn on some tunes and go. With me for this road trip is Isaac Harvey. In researching Isaac, I came across words to describe him such as amazing, superhuman, and legend. Born and raised in East London with a disability called limb pelvic hypoplasia, which is short, in short means no arms and short legs. Isaac started his vlogging journey by sharing a clip of himself playing PlayStation games with his feet. Isaac now has a thriving YouTube channel, which has earned him recognition as one of the best filmmakers in London. Hi, Isaac.
Hello, hello. Thanks for having me.
How does it feel to be described by others as amazing, superhuman, and legend?
It's something I never thought I would be called. And obviously, I feel a bit funny when I get self-praise or things that I do because I think it's just the right thing to do. But yeah. If it means I'm a legend and it showcases what people with disabilities can do, then that can only be a good thing.
Yep. That's one thing I'm getting from doing my own show is reading about people like you. I had come to a point where I would openly describe the disability community as quiet, but in reading more on you and the more guests that I have on, I'm changing my mind on it. There are a few people on the tip of the spear that's moving forward. You're one of them, and I'm really happy to have you on the show, man.
Oh, thanks for having me.
I read that you're a West Ham supporter. Is that right?
No, I don't watch football.
No, where did I read that then? Somebody came across. You were a West Ham supporter. There goes the show. Let's say goodbye.
Yes, yeah.
I was all ready to say, rah, rah, West Ham, they're not going to be relegated. So I was gonna try to bring happy praise to West Ham for you, but okay.
Well, I live near the stadium, if that helps.
That's where it came from there. Okay. Okay. So someone else that I read to learn about you must have described you as a West Ham supporter. Okay. So you must be crazy, man. Getting out there sometimes before and after matches. Well, maybe not so much after the matches because they haven't been doing so well. Anyway.
Yes.
Originally, I wanted to open with a YouTube video, but something you recently posted struck me as an opening point for discussion. This I think it was just last week, and it reads, "I am mainly seeing what is done with our own disability community, which again is great, but is that really helping? It goes back to what Sandra said to me, and this is describing you talking about another person. Yeah. We are preaching to the choir using the same hymn sheet." Now, this really had me then. We have a basic understanding of preaching to the choir We have a basic understanding of each other that the world was not built for people with disabilities. So should we be telling those who can make the difference? We should be highlighting and promoting those who are doing well in this space to inspire others to see the benefit of getting it right. And as always, doing it as a collective rather than it being a them versus us situation. And I think that goes back to what you were talking about being described as superhuman and stuff, about if you're being described as that, then you're going to use that to benefit others.
Yeah.
That was one of the big things that really summarizes all of the stuff that I've been reading from you. Very similar. What can you tell me about what you've learned over the past few years as your presence has become more of an open door and you are on the tip of the spear? How is that for you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when it comes to my advocacy stuff, I would say, you know, being born with a disability, I've always been an advocate for disability. But when it comes to speaking out and working with others and collaborating, that's only been through recent years. And as you mentioned about LinkedIn, that was the place where that all began. Because I'd known about LinkedIn for ages, and loads of people saying, you really need to join LinkedIn, you really need to join. And I always saw, and it was always advertised to me as the professional Facebook. Mm-hmm. So I was like, why do I need to join another Facebook, especially if it's professional? So I kept on ignoring it, kept doing what I was doing. And then it just kept on, and friends just kept saying, you know, you got to join. So I was like, okay, I'm going to join, but only to talk about wheels and wheelchairs. So for those who don't know, that's roller skaters pushing wheelchair users. And we do that around London. And we've done it, the organization's been around for 10 years, but I've been involved for the past over 3 years. And I thought, okay, let me go on LinkedIn and use it as an opportunity to maybe get sponsors, get more disability people involved.
Okay.
Just get to like a professional reach. And I remember doing my first post. It's quite funny. It was like, it starts off saying, hi, LinkedIn, you know, I'm new here. I don't really know what's going on, but I'm here. And that post alone got like the most engagement I've had compared to most platforms that I've only just begun. I think it got like 68 reactions, engagements. And then, yeah, I continued talking about wheels and wheelchairs. And then it was in July where I discovered it was the month of Disability Pride Month. And that was like celebrating and highlighting disability. And I'd never heard of the month before, but I thought, okay, well, I'm going to write a post about it. I had a picture of me laying on my bed here, sitting up. And I was like, you know, Disability Pride Month is a great month. And I can't remember exactly what I wrote, but I was saying all the things. And that was the first time it kind of went viral. My first viral post on any platform. And that was when I really connected with a lot of other disability advocates, got to see what other people are doing. And, you know, it's been a really learning experience for me. I felt that I didn't know much about disability until I joined LinkedIn. And that's how I've been able to really see it as a collective, because everyone's doing their part and we've got to do it together. But yes, it's, you know, I'm here to educate, but also learn from others.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's what's been happening to me as I get more in LinkedIn. I don't really look at Twitter and Facebook much anymore. It's LinkedIn. It's changed into something else. Now I'd like the listeners to pause the show for a moment and go to the Life's a Road Trip. And on there, you're going to find a YouTube video, with and about Isaac. It's titled Now I'm Using My Hours to Help Someone Else. It's from 2017, but it's on the Life's a Road Trip website. So we'll take a moment, pause for folks to go watch that and then come back. Okay. So in the video, your mother states that some mornings you wake with a lot of pain, but you keep going. And she says, you really don't have a choice, have you? It's a state of mind. Now, when I watched that, it made me pause, and I would certainly expect other people to be pausing, but it made me pause for another reason. And I'll get political here about healthcare in the United States. I know that you guys in Britain have more of a broad range healthcare system. Mm. How has that been benefiting you? Have you had to try to look in the nooks and crannies to try to get some healthcare benefits, or is it all laid out on the table for you?
Regarding pain.
Pain, and also with your condition, on getting help from others. I mean, that's probably not cheap.
Well, so we have the NHS, which is a free healthcare service. And, you know, I've had it pretty good, where I've had the support. You know, I've got scoliosis in my back, so that was seen very early on. So I was able to have it operated on, so I didn't have too much of a curvature of my spine. When it comes to my wheelchairs, I do get a new wheelchair. But it's the one problem with, even though I may have got them, it is still a long waiting list. sometimes they don't get right the first time, so you have to keep going back. And it, when it comes to like social workers beyond the healthcare and getting support, where I should be having like a personal assistant to help me with my day-to-day life, that's really difficult when you get the wrong person. And here we have roaming people, so we don't have you. Before, we used to have one person who knew all your needs, and then they would kind of be your advocate. But now it's whoever's on that day, the duty social worker. So you have to revisit the whole story again and explain it. Then you've got to trust them to give them a good case to why you need this and this. And, you know, that's a bit of a ongoing battle. And I've heard some real terrible stories from people within the community who, you know, they weren't given the right medication, and someone's had to keep going back to hospital because they know something's not right, but the doctor says otherwise. And yeah, it's just a bit all over the place. Like, it's not perfect for everybody. Even myself, you know, I might have had it good, but it's not like perfect.
Perfect. I've got one complaint from that video for you though, Isaac. Okay. There's a scene when you're spinning around in your wheelchair, and then the producer of the video is spinning the video itself.
Okay, so yes.
It's like, oh my God, again. No, I'm just kidding, man. It's really good. There's something I noticed though.
Yeah.
That, you know, you're being helped by your mother and someone else, but something happens to your aura. To me, I feel like I can read people's aura at times, and I'm not trying to get spiritual, but when you are in the wheelchair, it seems that there's a difference between, or there's a definite line between lack of independence and being independent. And it seems that when you're in the wheelchair and you're able to utilize it yourself without need from others, that's your independence. And your whole aura changes. It brightens up. That's just the feel and the sense I get from it. Tell me about independence, because I did read something about, you stated that motorized wheelchairs just blatantly gives you independence. Can you talk about how you feel when you're in that?
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to my wheelchair, I do feel a lot freer, because I also have a manual chair that someone has to push. And I don't know, it just makes me feel, I don't have to, I'm dependent on someone to help me get from A to B. I have to tell them, oh, I need to go over here. Whereas in my electric chair, I have the freedom to do it and go wherever I like. So yeah, there is that sense of independence, but then the independence stops when, for example, I can't go to the bathroom myself. Mm-hmm. I always need someone. So I may be able to travel into London myself, but I have to limit my time, because if I'm out for too long and I don't have anyone with me, I'm not able to eat. I'm not able to go to the toilet. So, you know, I have to time that correctly. We have a thing, Transport for London staff who help from different stations. I have to rely on them to get me with the lifts and things. So again, I lose that independence of being able to really travel independently. Lifts in buildings, I can't press that myself. Can't get through some doors, because even though they may be automatic, I still got to press the button.
Okay.
So yeah, it does have that real... Yeah, it's independent, but it's not independent, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I totally get it. Totally get it. I was dependent on people for over a month after I had the amputations on it. Yeah, I totally understand it. Mm. In that video, you also state, when you're helping some kids, and you state that you're helping them build confidence as you built confidence in yourself as a child. I look at that as, I applaud it, because you're paying it forward, because things that you've learned, I think you're noticing it in them, so maybe they don't have to go through as many struggles as you had. And again, I applaud that. I think that's fantastic. So, go ahead.
Yeah, it's funny, because many years ago, I didn't want to be an advocate, actually. I didn't want to talk about my disability, especially when it came to video. So, you know, as you mentioned, I was a vlogger for a couple of years, and I, even though I did like supporting people and creating videos, I did it because, you know, I wanted to show people like what the fun things that I get to do. And I never really spoke about disability openly. And again, thanks to friends and family, they kept saying, you know, you could really make a difference if you spoke about disability. And I thought, you know, why would I do that when I just love creating videos? And they said, oh, you could really make an impact on people's lives and change people's perspectives and help a lot of people. And I kept on continuing what I'm doing. And then I was given an opportunity to do a talk up north about overcoming obstacles. So I said, okay, I'll do that. And I spoke about the challenges I face, but then there's always a light at the end of the tunnel. And at the end of the talk, it just stuck with me forever. A woman came up to me. She gets like severe pains. And she said, you know, you've really changed my perspective listening to you. And, you know, I always complain about my pains, but now I don't see why I should have a reason to complain. And that was the first time I'd heard it from not a friend or family member and the impact I was making. And that's when I started to be more active and speaking on it in my videos and beyond that.
Very cool. And that takes you places. I was watching your posts. You were recently in the United States. Tell us about the trip.
Yeah, so went to Colorado with a group of mainly those who had accidents and became disabled wheelchair users. And yeah, we went to Winter Park and did a skiing trip, a skiing holiday for 10 days.
I think there was one shot and a comment about basically how this is going to be a heck of a trip. You did go downhill, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. So I've done skiing before, but this one was really special because the story was, so I went, and usually the day after we've arrived, they usually do the fitting and get everyone into the right skis and things like that. Because usually I'd sit in a sit ski and someone would control it. So I was getting ready to do that, and they said, well, actually, your guy's not here today. He's going to be here tomorrow. And I thought, usually they can fit me, and I have someone different every day because they have volunteers there. Okay. And I was like, okay. They didn't really say much. So we went exploring, got familiarized because this was our second time back to Colorado. And the next day came, and the guy was there, and he said, you know, we've got a sit ski for you, and you'll be able to control it using your feet. Cool. That's cool. So I got to use a foot control down the mountains at 12,000 feet.
Oh my God. Oh, okay. Oh man. That's going to stay with you forever. Oh, that must have been quite the trip.
Yeah.
Recently I also read about you being on at Nadex. First of all, what's Nadex? And if you could talk about your time there.
Yeah, so Nadex is basically a convention which showcases new accessibility equipment for people with disabilities, mainly physical disabilities.
Okay. And did you attend it or did you speak at it?
Yeah, I've always heard of Nadex, and I never really had a reason to go, and I always wanted to go, but someone reached out to me and said, would you like to become a speaker on the main stage? So I ended up becoming a speaker.
Yeah, and you mentioned in a post about, you know, it talked about how, again, you never intended for any of this stuff to happen. It's just strange how life can carry you in a direction without you even knowing it. Mm-hmm. And then once you get there, now you're able to look at it and you're past it, but you're still building from it. It's just wild.
It honestly, everything that I get up to is just like a surreal moment. It's like,
yeah,
how did this happen? I mean, getting to talk to you today is through social media. Like, who would have guessed this would happen, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's just, we take opportunities when we see them, but we also have to be responsible for and aggressive enough to seek opportunities and absolutely then grasp them. And that's what we're both doing.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about Wheels and Wheelchairs. You're the president of that. And just so the listeners know, look for the link to that on the Life's a Road Trip website. So it's in there. So go ahead, Isaac, tell us about how you got into it. What Wheels and Wheelchairs is all about.
Yeah. So just a brief history of it. So that in the 2012, a group of roller skaters and wheelchair users who had been doing that activity in Paris for 10 years, for their 10th anniversary, they challenged themselves to skate from Paris all the way to London with skaters pushing wheelchairs. So they knew how to get to the end of France, but they needed support on getting to London to get to the stadium. So they contacted London skaters, because there's a huge London skate scene here. And they contacted them and they said, oh, look, we want to bring some wheelchair users on skates. And they thought wheelchair users on being pushed by skaters, they just thought it was such a random thing to think about and do.
But it's a logical combination when you think about it.
Well, yeah, actually.
Yeah. Why not? It makes sense.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. To them, the Paris people. So
Parisians, yes.
But they said, okay, sure, we'll help you out with the route. So eventually they got the route together and they did it took them about, I think, 7 days to do the whole thing. They arrived here and all the London skaters saw their arrival and were like, wow, we really need to do something here. And in that same year, that's how Wheels and Wheelchairs was born. And they started taking people out from the hospice. So they came out for the first few years. And then that went on for many years. And then I first heard about it at the end of 2018. So here we have a park called Hyde Park. And every winter they have a thing called Winter Wonderland. So it's like the German markets, Christmas markets. And I went with a friend and we decided to go on the ice rink. And I went in my electric wheelchair on the ice rink, going around having fun. And one of the ice marshals comes up to me and says to me, oh no, we started talking and he says, oh, you know, would you be interested in wheelchair roller skating? And, you know, at this time I'd done a skydive, I'd done the skiing and things. So
Hang on. You said you did a skydive?
I've done a skydive, yes.
No shit. Yeah, okay.
2015.
Okay, man. Very cool. Can you just try to slip that one by?
Yeah.
I did it. Dude, you jumped up from a plane. You went down from a plane.
Yeah, 14,000 feet.
Holy.
In okay. Ohio.
Yeah. And you got some balls. Yeah. Okay.
So I started knowing about the skating, and I was sent some videos, and I was like, yeah, it's really cool. Yeah, I'd love to get involved. So I ended up contacting them. And at the time, I emailed the president at the time and said, look, I'm interested in taking part in this activity. And she gave me the most warmest email ever. And I thought, okay, this is like the group I want to be part of. So I emailed back saying, when would be the best time for me to come? And then I didn't hear back from her for like 2-3 weeks. And I thought, oh, that's strange. Did I say something wrong in that email? Which was like the first thing I thought. And then I got an email from the guy I met at Winter Wonderland to say, that same weekend, she, for unforeseen circumstances, she passed away. And it was kind of like a shock to everybody because no one was expecting it. And they had to have some time for grief and time to be like regroup, really. But yeah, I ended up going and really enjoying it and really getting heavily involved and skating on a Sunday, which was around London, the streets of London. And that was the first time I'd seen London in a whole new light. And the community were really welcoming. And, you know, I didn't feel as if I was in a wheelchair. And it's one of those situations where, you know, if the surface was bad, we all suffered. And if it was good, we could all have fun. So I did that for a whole year, skated in France as well, and did a lot of activities. And then at the end of the year, they have an AGM, so they have a committee, and I went to join in, and they were looking for a new president, and because of my involvement and how active I was, they asked me if I would like to take it, And I knew I had big shoes to fill from what the previous president had done, but I saw a lot of potential in the group that I accepted, and I've been the president ever since.
Yeah, I mean, it just makes sense because you've got coattails now from being out there and being known, and they should just grab a hold of your coattails and run with it. And that's what you guys are doing. Yeah. So next I want to talk about British Vogue. We're going to take a couple second break in case somebody wants to drop an ad. Okay. Earlier this month, and this is the first time I heard about it, and then I started digging into it. You posted this in part. The craziest part of all of this, this was never a dream of mine, as I never wanted to be a model, and I completely mocked the fashion industry. I never understood it as what, whenever I thought of fashion, was people wearing ridiculous outfits down the catwalk. But the day I was given the opportunity by Victoria to wear adaptive clothing is when I understood why fashion is so important and how I missed the opportunity for the wider community. And I wrote to you because there was a photo you posted of yourself. And I wrote that you're a dapper dude. And you were a dapper dude, man. I mean, you were very spiff in that image. Folks, I hope you find it. So you got to dig it up. But in there, you referenced to your talking part as a model at London Fashion Week. And Sandy Roberts, you might remember her. She's done a couple of things with you. Yeah, she was one of my guests, last month or so, 2 months ago maybe already. So tell us about British Vogue and how you came across this and how it made you think. I mean, there's one thing being on London Fashion Week, but then British Vogue. So talk about maybe blend it all together, London Fashion Week and British Vogue.
Yeah, like I said in the post, and I've said it multiple times, never a dream of mine, never thought it would even happen, especially as someone who mocked it. Yeah. I openly say I mocked it. I really did. I really couldn't understand. But again, it goes back to me joining LinkedIn, that I got approached by Victoria from Unhidden. So she had an adaptive clothing brand. And she basically said, oh, you know, it would be great to collaborate and do stuff together. I said, yeah, sure. Again, still not really understanding it, but I was like, okay, I'm happy to collaborate if it's, you know, if it's for the wider message with the disability community. I feel I should really see what it's all about, even if I don't like it. I should really take the push and do it. So she had a pop-up shop, at an adaptive fashion store that you know different designers could come, and it was in like the heart of London, central London, and I was gonna just visit and support her because this was 2021, so at the end of that year I was just going to go and support and find out more. So I was meant to go 1 week, but then I ended up being the week after. And that was her last day. And I called her and she said, you know, when you come tomorrow, would you like to become a model? And I thought, I was like, okay, I'll be a model. So it was in this like little pop-up shop and there was going to be 40 people there. And I had no training of what to do on the catwalk, but, you know, I knew it was about the straight face and just kind of just doing it. So I was like, yeah, okay, I'll do it. And that's when I got to wear adaptive clothing for the first time. And that's when the spark went in my head. And I was like, ah, okay, now I understand. Because they had magnetic buttons for people with cerebral palsy. And zips at the top. And that's when I was like, actually, yeah, now I get it. Because previously to that, my mom would just make the clothes fit me. So I didn't really see the need of adaptive clothing, but once wearing it, I was like, okay, I get it now. So I did that and got in contact with a couple of other people. And in February, I was asked again to do an official catwalk for London Fashion Week. And that's how I kind of got involved in London Fashion Week. And all of a sudden, 2 years later, British Vogue was a surprise to me because they used one of the photos of when I did it this February and it got into Vogue. And a bit surreal.
Interesting. Hey, that makes me think of a question for you. I don't know where this is going to go with us, but
okay.
Speaking of, you know, being in as parts of the disability community, have we turned a corner or are we just entering it?
I feel we have come a long way, but we have a long way to go. That's what I've always said here in London. You know, thanks to the London 2012 Games, we really did make a push for accessibility. And, you know, now we have something called the Elizabeth Line, which makes it's made such a huge difference for me getting into London and how that's really impacted those with disabilities. But, you know, we still have lifts breaking on a regular basis and we have people still not understanding. So, you know, I think the narrative has changed and more people are willing to listen, but we have a long way to go with it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's going to be a struggle. I sometimes when I'm talking to people about it, just point to the LGBTQ plus community and say, follow their lead, follow the same map that they did, because that's come a long way. So it's just my two cents worth.
But one thing I do want to say, and this is one thing I really do struggle with, is within our own community, there is a lot of infighting.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And I think that's the real problem when we can't all get on the same page. And it's like, we've struggled enough as people with disabilities to a world which is not made for us. And then we're still fighting each other. And it's like, why is this happening?
That's good that you bring that up, because people have to, and that's one thing I've been noticing about disability community. Let's talk openly about stuff. And you just bringing that up might piss off some people, but it might also get some talking going, some discussion about, let's mend some fences if there are fences that need to be mended, and let's just get behind something together. So absolutely. I have yet come across that. Wow. Oh, geez. I have some more digging to do.
Yeah. It's not, I mean, when we work together, it's great. But when it's the infighting, it's like, what's happening? Like, this really shouldn't be happening. And, you know, I'll be honest, some people think there's a hierarchy when it comes to disability, or how long have you had your disability for means I got better priority. And it's like,
oh God,
really?
I get into all political shit with soccer and parents, and I don't want another something like that. I'll watch out for it. Thank you for the heads up, Isaac. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
God, what have I gotten into? Oh, well. Hey, I read that you're now the video editor at Disability Expo.
Right.
What's Disability Expo first?
So Disability Expo is a convention that's going to be happening in July.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what are you doing with it? You know, being video editor, giving some thoughts.
Yeah. So I've been creating some videos promoting the different sections that they're going to be doing. And basically advertising the event. But again, that's another one with a lot of infighting. So it's a bit of a shame, because it has a lot of big potential, but it's going to be a bit of an interesting one. Hopefully it'll be great. I'm hopeful, but yeah.
Okay. Well, here's something maybe a little bit on the lighter side. I want to talk about your lunch with Dr. Is it Allie?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And you wrote, as we were munching on a beautiful afternoon from Arabica, fantastic Middle Eastern food. That's the name of the restaurant. It made me reflect on my life. Growing up, never in my life would I have thought I would be comfortable talking about mental health openly to anyone. I was blinded by these feelings, as I thought it was my problem and only I can fix it. I looked for external sources to fulfill my happiness, and I pushed away those who wanted to help me. Then when I was 24, when life was just became too much, I took it upon myself to take a step back and learn about the mind. Very good. That was one step completely changed my life forever, where I learned so many things. Honesty was my biggest learning. Interesting. Not just with those around me, but to be honest with myself. That's huge, I'm sure. Yep. if I'm not feeling okay, that's okay, as hiding from it will not make me feel better. Yes, I am not okay. So how am I now going to feel better? I am already looking forward to the next time where more deep discussion with and laughter is on the menu. Talk about that a little bit, will you? You have touched on it, but maybe a little bit more specifically, man, because you're looking at yourself.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
that's important.
Mental health has been something that, as you read, there's 24 years of my life, thinking that it's only my problem and only I can deal with it. It was something where, you know, I was seen as this inspiration, and as you mentioned at the beginning, this legend, this person who's really changing the narrative. And, you know, back then I looked at celebrities and people who are successful that they don't show or share when they're down, because looking at that, they only showed the positive things. And I thought, I can't share negative things. I can't share how I'm actually feeling, because that's not how they do it. And then I also thought, like, you know, I didn't want to disappoint the people around me. So all these different things. Then I had to deal with, I thought for true happiness, you need to be in a relationship. So I was striving for that for a long while. And then when I eventually did get into one, I still wasn't happy with myself. So I thought, oh, you know, I finally got what I've wanted. Why am I still not happy? So, you know, I became quite selfish in my actions and, you know, wanting to, I was like, I finally got what I wanted, so I'm going to be happy. And I became very selfish. And obviously, being selfish in a relationship, that's not going to work. So that didn't last too long. And then on top of that, you know, as you mentioned, as being YouTube's top vlogger, that was like, you know, I thought after now I've won this award, I've been on television, my life's going to change now. I'm going to get 1 million subscribers. I'm going to have loads of people following me, and I'm going to be in a mansion and all that kind of stuff, right? Living the life, basically. And a couple of months later, that didn't happen. And it really, really demotivated me. I was like, oh, I can't, you know, I put a lot of hours in and I've won this award, and why am I not getting this? And it was that, the relationship and everything that's coming together, is when it got to a breaking point. And I was like, you know what? I really need to learn about this. And that's when I took a step back. And the first thing which came to my mind, and I don't know if you've seen it. Have you seen the film Lucy?
Doesn't come to mind, no.
Scarlett Johansson. And it's a film, basically, a woman using more than 10% of her brain. And I don't know why this came to my head. And I thought, you know, is that real? Is that fantasy? Because I'd seen the film many years prior to this moment. And I was like, is this real or is it fantasy? And I searched up 10% of your brain. And that's when I learned from, I found a guy called Bob Proctor. And he was talking about law of attraction. And I'd never heard of that term before. And I was learning about it. And that's when I learned, you know, how we think, feel, and speak is the reality that we create. And really learning about that. And I was really fascinated with it. And I really took it upon myself to learn a lot about it. And then that's when I learned about meditation. Again, something I mocked. It's a reoccurring theme. I mocked quite a lot of things, but because I was like, how can you breathe for like 2 minutes and feel better? Like, that didn't make sense to me. But actually practicing it myself really made me become more mindful and really within myself. So I learned all of that, and I felt on top of the world, positive for a whole year. I was like, this is great. And it got to a point where I was like, yep, I don't need to do any more of this. I don't need to do any more learning. Don't need to do any more meditations. I'm all good now. 2 weeks later, back to step one again. And I was like, you know, how's this happened? And that's when I learned, you know, it's a journey rather than an end destination. And that's when I learned the importance of honesty and being real about it. You know, I obviously have a positive mindset, but be real about it. Because being real allows you to be prepared for negative things to happen or positive things to happen. You know, got to be having a realistic mindset to things. And that's definitely helped change my perspective and outlook on life.
Well, that goes along with what I've been learning about you, Isaac, is that I see you as both a learner and enjoying learning and a teacher. The things that you write about, you're not ashamed, you're not afraid to say some things, but then there's also way you get around and not, well, when you're sharing, here's something I want to share with you.
Yeah,
you wrote, you were at a Lebanese restaurant and you were in King's Cross. You're having lunch. I don't know if this was with Dr. Ali or not, but the good part of this was it made me think of my wife and I were in London back in October, and we stayed at the Megara Hotel, which is across from the train station. It has a beautiful murals on the outside of the hotel, and people there are fantastic. So if the Megara wants to send me a couple of free nights, maybe Sue and I will come there for doing an ad for them. No, I want to, I'll just open it with what you said.
Yeah.
It said, someone approached you and said, I would love to swap lives you for one day. Shit, man. It sounded like you wanted to go off on this lady when you were writing on it, and you weren't afraid, but you stopped yourself a little bit. So tell us about that.
Yeah. I mean, and by the way, that was the same day as Dr. Ali.
Okay, good.
So yeah, it was the day that I'd I was coming back home. And yeah, a guy who I know him, and he's great, and he's one of the train assistants who helps get people on and off the train and gets the ramp and everything. So yeah, he was saying, you know, I've been following you online since I met you, and you do such cool things, and then he said, yeah, I'd love to swap lives with you, and I knew he had best intentions, because I know he's a cool guy, and I wouldn't have had a go at him for saying that. And I didn't have an opportunity to really speak with him, only because, you know, by the time he had said that, I was already past the gate and I needed to get back home. But yeah, it made me think, you know, yeah, I might be. What you see of me is great and fantastic, and I've got all these great opportunities, but what really goes into it is the, you know, like I said, for the skiing, it's, yeah, I might've had the foot control going down the mountain, but every day I was in excruciating pain because of the seating wasn't very comfortable, or the 7-hour flight to get there. You know, that's a lot of pain you have to go through, and the planning of having someone to come with me for 10 days, or in the hotels that are going to be accessible, and my chair is going to be, yeah, hopefully he's not going to die. You know, there's a lot of things that need to be thought out, and you know, to swap lives with me means you have to go through that too. You know, it's not just the fun and games part, it's the whole lot. So yeah, it was I wrote that to give people a realistic point of view. And you know, even a post I wrote recently about living my best life, people are like, oh, you're living your best life. It's like, am I really? You know, is that really living my best life? I mean, I'm grateful for all the opportunities I'm doing, being in Vogue and skiing and all the great things I'm doing. It's like really grateful. But living my best life would be having a personal assistant to help me every day. Like, that's allowed me to be more spontaneous and more independent. You know, I think that would be my best life. But what I'm doing now is grateful, but not my best life.
Well, my perspective from you is my readings of what you have to say in your posts on LinkedIn. And I have to say that, including this interview, I feel like I'm up on the mountaintop with the Maharishi. So what's some final wisdom that you care to pass on to us, Maharishi? I've come all this way to see you. Please fulfill me.
I think, well, there's a lot of life lessons that I've learned, but I think at the end of the day, it's just being honest with yourself and be who you are, because no one else can do that. I think that's it. Yeah.
Comes in a nutshell. All right. So last question for you, dude.
Okay.
What's next? What's next for you?
To be honest, I ask that every single day. So I really have no clue what is next. Because I mean, these opportunities, like I said, are just things I never thought were things I would do or see as being possible. So I'm just going with the flow. And hopefully involves more conversations like this and being able to connect with other awesome people.
Cool. Yeah, it's all in front of you. You have no clue. Yeah. But go out there every day and see what the hell you get into.
Absolutely.
So I have to be honest with you, dude. This is where I end up doing this. And that means that we go into what's called a road trip roundup. It's five questions about you and road trips. Obviously, you're not driving. Yeah. I mean, but then again, from everything you've been telling me about skiing and jumping out of a freaking plane, man, it wouldn't surprise me if you had the opportunity and you'd figure it out. So I'm going to just go ahead and ask you the same damn questions I'm asking everybody else, okay?
Okay.
And if they don't quite fit, then let's figure it out.
Yeah.
Okay?
Sure.
When you're out and about, what's your favorite food?
Ooh, my favorite food. I like a bit of everything, but my favorite food has to be sweet corn.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you take it off? Now, this is something I did with my kids. Because the youngest, they had a problem with eating sweet corn off the cob. Do you have people take it off the cob for you? And then like cook it up in butter?
Sorry, you cut out a bit there, sorry.
Oh, okay. We're talking about sweet corn.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Do you have people take the kernels off the cob for you and then cook it up with some butter?
So I have a table that my brother fit for me and I can sit myself and eat. So I can eat a cob myself. But when I'm out, I do need someone to hold it.
Mm-hmm. Totally understand that. Of course.
Yeah.
So what would be your dream car to be a passenger in being on a road trip? Or have you been in something like that? That's really cool.
I wouldn't use this for a road trip, but the coolest car that I've been in, it was like a McLaren car, and I got to go around a sports track.
See, there you go again. You're making me jealous. This guy's nuts. He's either nuts or man, he's balls to the wall. I love it, man. This is great. You're surprising the heck out of me.
Honestly. Okay. Yeah. And that was kind of like a spontaneous thing that technically I shouldn't have been able to have done, but I did.
Technically, I shouldn't have been able to, but I did.
Yeah.
That's you.
Okay. Yeah, basically. Yeah.
Have that on a t-shirt. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, do you want me to explain that story or...
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, sure. So basically in France, they do it's called Le Mans, and it's a racetrack. Mm-hmm. And they do a 24-hour roller skating event. So in 2019, I was meant to go be part of the parade before the skate in my chair and then see the race happen, people getting involved for 24 hours. So we did a road trip, actually, first ever road trip from London to Paris, driving there. Sorry, to Le Mans. Cool. Hire a car, and there was four of us, and we drove all the way there. And it was that weekend where it was scorching hot everywhere, and on the track it was like 50 degrees, and the minister of the area was like, "Nope, you're not going ahead with this, because if someone was to fall on that track, it would, you know, you'd have burn scars and all of that." So, you know, the event's not happening. And that he only made that decision once we had arrived, right? So we're like, oh, gosh, we drove all this way and it's not happening. So anyway, we decided, okay, we're still going to skate around the area. And we went up to, and I was like, you know, while I'm here, you know, I would love to see the track. So they said, okay, well, let's see what we can do. So we went up to one of the guards and we said, look, we've come all this way. Can he come and see the track? And they said, you know, we'll let you come through. So got in and it was like all the pits and all that. I was like, oh, this is awesome. And then the guy was like, would you like to come in one of our cars and we can drive you around?
Oh, my.
I was like, yeah, we're like, yeah, sure. So to put a helmet on, two guys at the back, two seat belts, because you know the horsepower and everything was going to be a lot.
Yeah.
And I got to go around in this sports car, and you know, I had two, I'm glad two people were in the back because they had to hold me up. Honestly,
I'm picturing it. You're nuts.
Yeah, so I did video it, and I'm yet to release it because at the time they were like, you can't release this, you shouldn't have been able to have done this, but so I got it on video.
okay well, that I'm gonna use that as the last question, is your favorite road trip memory. That's got to be it. So you just nailed question number two and question number five at the same time. Thank you. Okay. There's no way you could top that.
We'll go on with
the last two then. Sure, but will sure. now be the last two.
Sure.
Last cassette or CD that played while you were traveling. So maybe while you're on your way to Le Mans.
Sorry, say the question again.
The last cassette or CD that was playing while you're on this trip.
I played a lot of... I might be cheating. We did it through the Bluetooth on my phone. And we were playing Electro Swing.
Oh, I heard a lot of that while we were in Europe last fall. Yeah. And we really came home thinking about where can we find that? And we couldn't find any. That's what the term is, Electro Swing. Okay, yeah. I'll tell Sue about it.
Yeah, cool. it's a genre I never thought I'd really be interested in. But yeah, I was playing that in the car, and it was new to the other people I was with. So yeah.
Okay, cool. All right, so now what's going to be the last question? Okay, is Coke or Pepsi?
Oh, I prefer Coke.
Okay, most people do. Yeah. That's what I'm finding.
Yeah.
So we're going to wrap up our show, but I wanted us to stay on for just a couple minutes, and I'll just tell everybody, challenge, relax, and thanks for listening, or continue listening to Life's a Road Trip.
Yep, thank you.
Thanks for listening. Check out previous episodes with new ones dropping each Tuesday. If you don't see a synopsis of this show where you're listening, visit our website at lifesaroadtrip.podbean.com for more information on this week's guest. This is your host, Scott Martin, reminding you that Life's a Road Trip.